Hello, knowledge seekers. In this episode of 20 Minute Books, we delve into the provocative world of renowned biologist Richard Dawkins with his influential work, The God Delusion. This incisive book embarks on a mission to dismantle the traditional arguments for the existence of God, suggesting instead the highly improbable nature of a supreme being. Dawkins argues that religion should not shape our moral framework, contending that it may, in fact, subvert our ethical standards. The God Delusion is not just an academic critique, it's a book that stirs conversation and thought across the fields of religion and philosophy. It serves as a powerful resource for agnostics and atheists seeking substantial arguments to support their beliefs while providing valuable insights for anyone intrigued by this ever-pertinent dichotomy between science and faith. Dawkins, born in Kenya in 1941, is not only an esteemed English ethologist and evolutionary biologist, but also a prolific writer. His reputation is underscored by prestigious affiliations and accolades, including fellowships at the Royal Society and the Royal Society of Literature. Among his honors are the Royal Society of Literature Award and the Michael Faraday Award of the Royal Society. Step into a world where the existence of God is bravely questioned, and the societal implications of religious beliefs are scrutinized with intellectual rigor. Join us as The God Delusion offers a compelling exploration of how our understanding of the divine shapes our perceptions of the world. The God Delusion, the Science Behind Atheism. Introduction. Diving into the divine debate. Is God more than mythology? The human quest for understanding the universe often leads to one persistent question: does God exist? Across cultures and history, we've referred to this supreme being with various names: God, Allah, Vishnu, to name a few. Yet, despite millennia of faith and devotion, the truth of a divine being's existence remains a profound mystery at the heart of human existence. On the surface, it appears religions offer precious gems of moral wisdom. The Bible, the Quran, and numerous other sacred texts have acted as compasses in the moral landscape of humanity. But when you look closer, when you really scrutinize the narratives and commandments, a complex and often unsettling picture emerges. Through this exploration, you'll encounter the discrepancies among the Gospels on the crucial details of Jesus' birth, the possibility that religion might simply be a side effect of our evolutionary journey, and the unsettling implications of the biblical tale of Lot, demonstrating the troubled morality found within Scripture. Join me as we embark on a journey to critically examine the foundations of religious belief, shining a light on the facets of faith that are seldom questioned, and bringing the legitimacy of divine authority under the microscope. Part 1. Dissecting the pillars of divine existence: logic, reason, and the quest for a prime mover. Throughout history, philosophers have grappled with a monumental task: to provide solid proof of God's existence. The attempts come in various shapes and sizes, with two of the most prominent being cosmological and ontological arguments. But they share a common goal: to offer incontrovertible logic as evidence of the divine. Imagine standing at the beginning of time, faced with the infinite expanse of the cosmos. The cosmological arguments assert that something, or someone, must have set the universe into motion. Renowned thinkers like Thomas Aquinas referred to this as the first cause argument. It's founded on the belief that there was once a point when no physical thing existed, and since the material world now thrives around us, something must have sparked it into being. Naturally, that something is presumed to be God, the unmoved mover. Aquinas' cosmological argument hinges on the necessity for a prime cause, yet it leaves an unanswered question hanging like stars in the night sky. If everything requires a cause, what or who caused God? Now let's turn from the grandeur of the cosmos to the complexity of language with ontological arguments, a mental exercise in defining God into existence. Anselm of Canterbury, a pioneer of this argument, reasoned that if we can conceive of an absolutely perfect being, then that being must exist in reality, for existing is surely more perfect than non-existing. However, over the centuries, critics like David Hume and Immanuel Kant have sliced through Anselm's logic like a keen-edged sword. They argue that existence cannot be treated as a trait or quality. Just because we can imagine perfection doesn't necessitate its reality, much like envisioning a unicorn doesn't summon one into being. These arguments stand as intellectual monuments to our yearning for understanding. Yet, through critical examination, we can see they are more like sandcastles, intricate and fascinating, but ultimately unable to withstand the ceaseless waves of inquiry and skepticism. Part 2. Scriptural Scrutiny. On the reliability of holy texts as proof of divinity. The Bible, a literary titan, boasts the title of the most widely circulated text on the globe. It stands to reason that such a universally cherished book would be brimming with irrefutable testimony to the existence of God. Yet when we delve into the scriptures with a keen eye, can we genuinely say they are reliable witnesses? Regrettably, the sacred pages are not immune to human imperfections. The Bible has undergone transformations through the centuries, each scribe's hand introducing potential errors and discrepancies. The result? Finding the unaltered voice of the original text is akin to seeking the soft echo of a whisper in a bustling marketplace. The Gospels, narratives at the heart of the Bible, weren't penned until long after the time of Jesus, and their pages unfurl a tapestry of conflict and contradiction. The Gospel according to John, for example, speaks of a Jesus surprising his followers by not being a native of Bethlehem, contradicting Old Testament prophecy. On the flip side, Matthew and Luke declare Jesus' birth in Bethlehem without reservation, though they can't seem to agree on the circumstances leading to his arrival. Scholars of the biblical text frequently agree that the book is less a historical chronicle and more a collection of narratives, a storytelling endeavor etched in divine ink. Even the evangelists, the authors of the Gospels, are shrouded in mystery, their true identities lost to time. Who were these figures whose works marched into the official canon from a vast array of gospel tales? To shed light on the evolving nature of these stories, consider the words of Bart Ehrman, an American biblical scholar. In his book Misquoting Jesus, he navigates the intricate landscape of the Bible's transmission, highlighting that the scriptures we know today are the offspring of accidental scribal slips and purposeful textual crafts. It is within this realm of doubt and debate that the scriptures reside, a record steeped as much in the art of human narrative as in the testament of any observable truth. The search for God within these pages, therefore, is met with more questions than answers, an odyssey through a realm where faith persists despite gaps and contradictions that the light of history has yet to fully illuminate. Part 3. Natural Selection. Unweaving the divine tapestry with the threads of evolution. With the Bible's reliability in question, many turn to the intricate complexity of life on earth as evidence for a divine creator. Yet, could it be that the incredible diversity of life is not the brushstroke of a cosmic artist, but rather the result of an entirely natural, unguided process? The counterpoint to divine creation lies in the theory of evolution, birthed from the mind of Charles Darwin. It tells a tale not of sudden appearances, but of gradual transformations, where life's complexities emerge through natural selection. This process is mercilessly patient, with organisms forever dancing to the tune of environmental adaptation. The most successful dancers pass on their genes, leading to a proliferation of life in myriad forms. Humans, with all our unfathomable complexity, are but one of the countless products of this eons-long evolutionary ballet. The likelihood of any specific species existing might seem astronomically low. However, if one factors in the vast timescales and the multitude of tiny evolutionary steps, the emergence of complex life becomes not just probable, but inevitable. How does this relate to the notion of God? Simply put, the hypothesis of a supernatural creator introduces an even greater improbability. If we marvel at the statistical unlikeliness of human evolution, conceive then, how much more improbable would be the existence of an omnipotent being with the power to create the entire tapestry of life, and indeed the universe itself. Moreover, if God is postulated as the ultimate first cause, uncaused and uncreated, we encounter an intellectual paradox. Evolution is predicated on precursors and gradual shifts, yet God would have neither precursor nor cause, standing outside the universal laws of cause and effect, a concept at odds with the naturalistic explanations evolution provides. In light of this, the scales of probability tilt against the existence of a creator. Evolution presents a scenario where complexity naturally arises from simplicity over vast stretches of time, offering a more parsimonious and statistically sound explanation than the existence of an all-powerful God, making it the Occam's razor of origins. Isn't it more rational, then, to cling to the plausibility of natural processes rather than to the implausible and supernatural? Part 4. The Serendipitous Emergence of Faith. A quirk of evolutionary processes. In a universe without a divine architect, the roots of religion may seem enigmatic, burgeoning like a lush tree in seemingly barren soil. Upon contemplation, one might ask, from whence does religious belief spring, if not from a divine seed? The answer may be as intriguing as the question itself. Religion, it turns out, may be an incidental byproduct of evolution. Picture evolution as an artist, sometimes leaving behind unintended smudges in its masterpieces. Not every trait shaped by the forces of natural selection has a straightforward advantage. Sometimes traits persist as incidental side effects, curious vestiges of otherwise advantageous adaptations. Take the moth, an unwitting victim of its own evolutionary programming, allured to death by the flicker of a flame. This behavior once steered it by moonlight, a trusted beacon across the night sky. Yet now, artificial lights beckon, and the moth's once reliable navigation system leads it to a fiery demise. The moth doesn't seek its own destruction. It's simply following a deep-rooted ancestral guidance system that hasn't caught up with the human alteration of its environment. So, too, religion might be seen through the lens of evolutionary leftovers. Childhood, a time when our ancestors' survival hinged on absorbing knowledge and warnings from their elders, favored the trusting and credulous mind. This trait served well in discerning the dangers of nature. A child who believed their parents' cautionary tales about venomous snakes was more likely to thrive. However, the byproduct of this trust is a mind that doesn't discriminate between various types of information. True or false, helpful or fanciful, a youngster's mind absorbs it all without filters. And so, religious beliefs could be passed from elders to youth not as essential knowledge for survival, but as part of the cultural legacy spreading across generations. In this view, the religious impulse is not the product of divine intervention, but an artifact of our evolution, belief and faith, echoes of our ancestors' penchant for accepting wisdom from those who came before, resonating across the millennia. Could it be that our deep-seated spiritual urges are much like the moth's misguided flight, endearing relics of an evolutionary past? Part 5. The Evolutionary Roots of Morality. Self-interest in the guise of goodness. If religion is an unexpected offspring of evolution, then surely our capacity to act with goodness and altruism must have otherworldly origins, right? Surprisingly, this too is a product of the sifting sands of natural selection, with goodness having its own evolutionary agenda. Let's explore the evolutionary storyline of altruism. Why does a creature do good, especially when survival often seems to favor the fittest and the ruthless? The answer springs from the well of genetic strategy. Goodness begins at home, with our closest kin. Genes, the architects of instinct, are designed to be self-perpetuating. Survival, then, is not just about the individual, it's about ensuring the continuation of one's genetic lineage. Showing kindness and protection to family members is, in essence, an investment in one's own genetic legacy, a tactical move in the game of genes. But our evolutionary playbook doesn't stop there. Outside the bloodline, we find reciprocal altruism. This is the idea that doing good begets expected returns. Think of it as nature's own barter system. We're nice because subconsciously, we're banking on future favors. This quid pro quo is not just a human construct. It's part of nature's inherent give and take, as seen with bees pollinating flowers in exchange for sweet nectar. Now transpose this idea onto the tapestry of human interactions. The division of labor in societies, hunters, gatherers, blacksmiths, is predicated on a similar principle. We each bring different skills to the proverbial table, expecting that our contributions will be equitably reciprocated. From this perspective, every good deed is a thread in the intricate weave of social norms and expectations that bind a community together. But what happens to those who don't play by the rules? These social parasites face the consequences of their actions. Ostracism. Being branded as untrustworthy can spell social and, by extension, evolutionary death. So it's clear, far from being a divine edict, our impulse to be good is driven by a deep-seated self-interest, a biological calculation designed to ensure our own genes' propagation. It's as much an act of self-preservation as it is a flowering of intrinsic virtue. Part 6. Modern Morality versus Biblical Values, A Clash of Ethical Frameworks. Ponder upon the thought of offering up your daughters to an unruly mob to protect your guests. Is there a moral universe in which this could be seen as an admirable act? Most would answer with a resounding no. Yet such is the moral predicament presented in the harrowing biblical story of Lot, painting a stark contrast between ancient moral dictums and today's ethical standards. The Bible, revered by many as a moral compass, hosts an array of narratives that, upon closer examination, clash violently with contemporary values. The Old Testament especially portrays a depiction of God who strikes as vengeful, easily incensed, and intolerant, an embodiment of attributes that modern society actively seeks to move away from. Now, let's shift our gaze to the New Testament. Here, we encounter the teachings of Jesus Christ, which, although more progressive than the Old Testament's dictums, still contain philosophies that might give the ethically minded pause. The narrative is underpinned by the gloom of original sin, the notion that we are born bearers of the transgressions of our forebears, Adam and Eve. Our narrative salvation, as per this doctrine, comes at the gruesome cost of Christ's life, a sacrifice whose necessity and almighty being could potentially sidestep with a simple act of clemency. In a contemporary context, this doctrine of hereditary guilt often perplexes the sensibilities shaped by notions of fairness and personal responsibility. It raises a critical question: why should the divine theatrical demand such an elaborate and painful display of redemption when the concept of forgiveness is so readily appreciated and enacted in today's world? At the core of this narrative struggle lies a foundational question. Should our moral guidance really be anchored to the pages of scriptures whose virtue seems so disjointed from the very fabric of modern humanism? Perhaps it is time for us to look beyond the written verses and seek a moral framework that is in harmony with the evolved empathy and understanding of our present society. Part 7. The Evolution of Ethics. How societal values shape our sense of right and wrong. One might wonder where to turn for moral guidance in a world that recognizes the flaws in its ancient texts. The compass of right and wrong, it seems, is not static, but shifts with the progression of time. Molded by the collective consciousness of society, known as the Zeitgeist. Zeitgeist, the prevailing cultural climate of thought and feeling, is an ever-evolving tapestry of values and norms. It's a slow and subtle dance, barely perceptible to those who sway to its rhythm in the present. But when viewed through the lens of history, its movements cast long, defining shadows. Consider the seismic shift in women's rights over the past century. It was as recently as 1920 that American women celebrated their hard-won right to vote, a right that wouldn't be extended to Swiss women until more than half a century later. This highlights the profundity of moral evolution. Yesterday's norms can become today's relics in the blink of an historical eye. Take, too, the example of slavery. Once an entrenched institution, the moral consensus on slavery underwent a radical transformation in a relatively short span of time, ushering in new legal and ethical norms. But the question remains, what propels the zeitgeist forward? It is a confluence of elements, ideas exchanged through conversation, literature, media, and the persuasive power of transformative leaders. Figures like Martin Luther King Jr. wield a profound influence by rallying the masses toward a common moral horizon. Opposed to this evolving ethical landscape, we find religion often planted firmly, resistant to the tides of change, potentially restraining the natural progression of societal morals. Thus, it becomes evident that morality is not a divine decree, but a living dialogue, one that breathes with the spirit of each age. Our sense of right and wrong is not an archaic tablet etched in stone, but a lively conversation, echoing through the halls of time and driven by humanity's collective quest for a more just and compassionate world. Part 8. Fundamentalism and the Moral Compass. The Perils of Scripture in the Literal Sense. Everyday headlines showcase the stark reality of religious fundamentalism, a firm adherence to the literal interpretations of sacred texts that often clashes sharply with evolving societal norms. Taking scripture as the ultimate decree, some followers espouse beliefs and enforce practices that challenge contemporary moral sensibilities, creating ripples of contention across diverse societies. Take, for example, the treatment of homosexuality. Despite strides in acceptance and understanding, homosexuality remains condemned in various religious circles due to direct scriptural denunciations. The Taliban's horrifying former practice of burying homosexuals alive in Afghanistan is a grim testament to the consequences of unyielding scriptural literalism. This form of intolerance isn't confined to regions typically labeled as conservative. It cast its shadow over Britain too, where homosexual acts remained illegal until the late 1960s, out of allegiance to heteronormative scriptural interpretations. Even in the supposed melting pot of the United States, some fundamentalist Christian groups and political leaders continue to vilify homosexuality, equating it with acts like bestiality and deploying scriptural rhetoric in their campaigns against LGBTQ+ rights. Abortion is another battleground wrought with scriptural underpinnings, where the debate is charged with the language of life and murder. Some hardline Christians equate abortion with homicide, and this belief has driven certain individuals to acts of violence. Paul Hill's murder of an abortion doctor and his bodyguard on the grounds of protecting unborn children is an extreme example of religious conviction manifesting in lethal action. Yet, there lies an inherent contradiction, a paradox that weighs heavily on the conscience. How can one advocate for life while committing murder? How can the tenet of love inherent in Christianity be reconciled with such hate and intolerance? It is evident that when scriptures are held as the immutable law, rather than interpreted through the lens of context and compassion, they can warp the fabric of society's moral values, creating divisions and justifying actions that stand at odds with the principles of human dignity and equality that define much of modern ethical thought. It is this literalism that poses a question to the balance of faith and moral progress. Is it time we interpret our ancient texts not as infallible edicts, but as part of a broader conversation that has grown with humanity over the ages? Part 9. When Childhood and Doctrine Collide. The contentious issue of religious indoctrination. In our societies, it's inconceivable to imagine a newborn pledged allegiances to a political party, yet we barely bat an eyelid when children are irrevocably signed up for religious memberships. This puzzling societal norm persists despite the evident conflict with the principle that important life choices should be reserved for the age of consent. Religiously, a child's fate can be sealed with rituals as simple as a baptism, or as irreversible as circumcision, acts that are both physical and symbolic, pledging them to a doctrine before they can even utter a word. Contrarily, the same societies that sanction such early religious enrollment also enforce laws deeming minors incapable of making legally binding decisions until they reach a certain age. It's not just about membership, however. A darker shadow looms in the form of mental and physical harm inflicted under the guise of religious instruction. While the distressing instances of physical abuse at the hands of clergy have been widely documented, the psychological trauma embedded in certain religious practices is equally concerning. Picture this: young children, wide-eyed and impressionable, being led through hell houses, a macabre take on the traditional haunted house designed to instill the fear of eternal damnation. These children are ushered through graphic depictions of what awaits sinners in the afterlife, complete with the scents and sounds intended to terrify. For a child raised in the Christian faith, the fear of hell can be paralyzing, particularly when instilled with the belief in original sin. The aftermath of such experiences is often a mind besieged by dread, susceptible to enduring psychological aftermath. Numerous accounts of trauma emerging from such indoctrination point to a troubling intersection between religious beliefs and child welfare. As society continues to grapple with the role and reach of religious education, a question persists: how do we balance respect for religious freedom with the imperative to protect the most vulnerable among us from indoctrination and trauma? It's a moral quandary that deserves careful consideration, as the answer has profound implications for the upbringing and well-being of future generations. Part 10. The Delicate Balance of Respect: The Preferential Treatment of Religious Beliefs. In the intricate social tapestry of our world, the right to practice one's religion is often enshrined in law, a sacred principle that upholds the liberty of conscience. Yet this reverence for religious beliefs sometimes tips the scales to provide them with protections and privileges not afforded to secular convictions. Indeed, religion seems to don an invisible armor, deflecting scrutiny and criticism more effectively than its non-religious counterparts. Consider the case of conscription. A staunch pacifist, armed with philosophical arguments against warfare, might struggle to secure an exemption from military service. Contrast this with the individual who invokes religious principles to oppose the draft. Often, their path to exemption is smoother, as if the weight of their conscience is somehow heavier. The same preferential pattern emerges in the judicial realm. In the United States, a Supreme Court decision carved a sacramental niche for a church's use of hallucinogens, deeming it a spiritual imperative, while medicinal cannabis users found themselves denied under the gavel of the same court. But there's a flip side to this shield of sanctity. It allows some to wield their religious convictions as weapons of discrimination, cloaking prejudiced actions under the guise of faith. A glaring example is a young boy in Ohio whose anti-gay, anti-Islamic, and anti-abortion t-shirt was defended as an expression of religious freedom, a defense less likely to be successful if those views were purely secular. This pattern extends beyond the borders of any single country. When Danish cartoons featuring the Prophet Muhammad sparked outrage among Muslims worldwide, the incensed reactions, some of which turned violent, were met with a mixture of condemnation and empathy. The religious nature of the affront seemed to diffuse the international community's indignation to some extent, providing a buffer that most likely wouldn't exist for purely secular grievances. Such incidents beg the question: have we, in our pursuit to honor individual freedoms, inadvertently created a system where religious values are held above critique and accountability? The answer seems to lean in the affirmative, with religious groups often enjoying a disproportionate degree of protection. A situation that not only challenges the principle of equality, but also tests the bounds of secular societies striving for impartiality. Part 11. Seeking Inspiration and Solace. The Roles of Science and Skepticism in Modern Spirituality. The search for meaning, beauty, and comfort in the human experience is an intrinsic part of our nature, often sought through the realms of religion and spirituality. But is religion the ultimate wellspring of inspiration and solace? Or could the pursuit of scientific understanding offer a richer source? Science, which delves into the mysteries of the cosmos and the intricacies of life on Earth, has arguably provided a more profound canvas for human inspiration than religion. Many masterpieces tied to religious themes were indeed crafted at the behest of the Church, which, for centuries, monopolized both the funding and direction of artistic endeavors. However, when we free ourselves from the constraints of religious narratives, we unleash the boundless potential for inspiration that science offers, an unbridled exploration of the universe around us and within us. Additionally, turning to science for solace, rather than religion, may evade a certain hypocrisy present in religious consolation. While the idea of an afterlife can be a comforting concept, especially in times of grief or approaching death, it raises an interesting paradox. Despite their professed beliefs, many religious adherents exhibit a deep-seated dread of death, a fear that seems incongruous with the promise of eternal paradise. This tension is particularly apparent for Christians who live with the dual narrative of heaven's blissful eternity and hell's unending torment. The threat of purgatorial suffering maintains a grip on their psyche, coloring their supposed aspirations for the afterlife with shades of terror. It seems there's a discrepancy between the beliefs proclaimed on Sunday mornings and the gut reactions to life's final curtain call. Could it be that beneath the veneer of certainty, there lies a current of doubt, an unspoken admission that faith in the hereafter may not be as unshakable as it appears? In the end, we might find richer creative muses and greater peace in embracing the awe-inspiring truths revealed by science, free from dogmatic assertions. Perhaps our path to genuine inspiration and comfort lies not in the echo chambers of the past, but in the open-ended symphony of discovery that science conducts with each passing day. Final summary. The narrative presented throughout this exploration suggests that the existence of a divine being, God, is an improbability that may not withstand the scrutiny of reason and scientific inquiry. The idea that our commitment to religious doctrines could hinder societal development is a pivotal theme, inviting us to examine critically the role religion plays in shaping values and influencing progress. The book posits that religion, often clung to as a source of moral guidance and existential comfort, may in fact entrench antiquated beliefs and practices that are incompatible with contemporary ethical standards. It also suggests that the byproducts of evolution may offer more plausible explanations for many phenomena traditionally attributed to divine intervention, including the very inclination toward religious belief. Ultimately, the call is for a reassessment of our reliance on religious systems, a move towards a greater acceptance of scientific understanding and rational thought. The position encourages embracing the changes in societal values that naturally emerge over time and pursuing a path that aligns with humanistic principles and the ever-expanding knowledge we have of the world around us. Thank you for joining me today on this journey of learning and discovery as we explored the insights of another thought-provoking book in our growing library of knowledge. If you've enjoyed our time together, please take a moment to follow our podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and share 20-minute books with other knowledge seekers. Your support truly means a lot. Don't forget to join me again in the next episode, where we will delve into another enriching book. Until then, happy reading and happy listening.